Hare Om Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigoda Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, Bhrigu takes up the recitation. Last point was made. Last was okay. So yeah. So the last point was that Vishnu has composed these institutes, right? So the Dharma Shastra, this Manu, is composed by Vishnu himself, then given to Brahma, Brahma to his sons, headed by Maritsu, and now Bhrigu will, you know, then recite the actual institutes. Then that great sage Bhrigu, being thus addressed by Manu, spoke, pleased in his heart to all the sages. Listen. Six other high-minded, very powerful Manus, who belong to the race of this Manu, the descendant of the self-existent Swayambhu, and who have severally produced created beings. So, six other Manus, right, who belong to the race of this Manu, meaning Brahma, who is the descendant of the self-existent Swayambhu, of Vishnu. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. So are Svardaukisha, Atami, Tamasa, Raivata, Chakshusha, possessing great luxter, and the son of Vivasvat. These seven very glorious Manus, the first among them whom is Swayambhuva, produced and protected this whole movable and immovable creation, each during the period allotted to him. So Swayambhuva is Brahma's son. Right? Then the other six then come after. Eighteen nimishas means that's a winking of the eye when you blink. Right? So 18 of those are one kashta. 30 kashtas, one kala. 30 kalas, one muhurta. And as many muhurtas, one day and one night. So this is, you've adjusted here?
Yes.
Okay, so then we have here a nimisha, twinkling of the eye is 0.178 seconds, right? Just in case you just really had to know, right? Okay, 18 nimishas, one kashta, so that's 3.2 seconds. 30 kashtas or one kala. Well, that may be why the... One of the on those Vedic instruments, one of them is set on it measures 3 seconds. So it's probably measuring kashtas, yes. Something. You know, I mean, one of them does half seconds. The sundial. But I'm saying, yeah, I think in Delhi it does half seconds, but I think in Jaipur it does 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. 30 kashtas are one kala, so that's 96 seconds. 30 kalas one muhurta, that's 2,880 seconds. That's 48 minutes. And as many muhurtas, one day and night. So 30 times 48 is, what is it, 100 minutes?
24 hours.
Oh, times 60 is 24 hours.
Okay. Divided by 60.
Oh, divided by 60. Okay, the sun divides days and nights, both human and divine. The night being intended for the repose of created beings and the day for exertion. Right? So that's the idea. I mean, so we see as all these things are being based on work, right? Time is what is the proper, when is proper to do what work, Mm. Right? And then the sun divides days for exertion, night is for rest. Mm. Right? A month is a day and night of the mains. But the division is according to fortnights. Right? The dark fortnight is their day for active exertion. The bright fortnight, their night for sleep. Okay? So when the moon is getting full, that's their night. When it's going from full down, it is their day. Right? So we start it from the full moon. Mm-hmm. You know, what is their day? Right? For Purnima to Amavasya, and then from that. So we do it that way. But some also, like smartas and that, do it the other way. They start with the Amavasya. Mm-hmm. So they start with their night and then their day. You know, so it's just, ours is more natural. Right? You do the day, then the night. The night's part of the day. So they're according to the moon. So it says the sun divides for the humans and for the demigods, but the moon divides for the forefathers. A year is a day and a night of the gods. Right? Their division is as follows. The half year during which the sun progresses to the north will be the day, that during which it goes southwards, the night. Right? So that means we just had Makara Sankranti. So that will be the beginning of their day. And that will go up until somewhere like in June. Is it?
July.
Okay, yeah, July. And then from there it'll go, that'll be the night until there. But we see as the demigods, after Kartik, the new year starts. That's because that's when everybody gets up. Right? So they get up before the day starts. Just like we get up before the sun rises. So they get up before. But here now the brief description of the duration of a night and day of Brahman, and of the several ages of the world, Yuga, according to their order. They declare that the Krita age consists of 4,000 years of the gods. So Krita is another name for Satyayuga. The twilight preceding it consists of as many hundreds, and the twilight following it of the same number. Right? So you have that it's 4,000 years, so it'll be 400 before and 400 after is the twilight. Because it's not that, you know, it's light like this and then bang like that, it just gets dark. It doesn't happen like that. I think it only does that in movies, right? You're walking along, bright daylight, suddenly the sun goes like that and then everything comes out, and you know, like that. But it's there's always a twilight. Right? But, you know, who's going to sit around and wait for the twilight, right? Okay, so that means, yeah. So the Satyayuga, 4,000 years of the god, 4,000 of 360 human years is 1,440,000 years. The twilight preceding it consists of many hundreds, the twilight following the same number, 400 each. So that's 4 times 2 times 360 is 288,000 years. So total 480 years of the demigods, or 1,728,000 human years. So when Prabhupada mentions, when we get the calculation, it's already calculated the sandhya. So when we say it's that many.
There is a pattern between here. This it says that yuga, 1,440 years, and the muhurta, which is 1,440.
Oh, that's interesting. You see that, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting. So time is all based on the same kind of principle there. The other ages with their twilights preceding and following, the thousands and hundreds are diminished by one in each. So the thousands means the you know, the years of the main, and then the hundreds means the twilight. Right, so Satyayuga will be 4,800 years of the gods, Treta Yuga will be 3,600, Dwapara 2,400, Kali Yuga 1,200. So you get 12,000 years total. So then that will be the, 4,320,000 human years, yes.
So the sandhyas between the ages, they are period where the ages are not fully manifest, but some aspects of the earlier ages manifest, and then...
Yeah, of the next. Yeah, yeah. So you see something. So otherwise, how do you get Duryodhana? Because it was Dwapara Yuga. You know, so technically it's in the Sandhya, so then you can get... You know, it's just like... when the Sunday starts, it's more day than night, but when it's ending, it's more night than day. So that's the thing. So it's more night than day, it means that the Sunday of the night is there. And when it's more bright, it's the Sunday of the day. Right? Is that so? These four yugas together are known as a Mahayuga. Oh, excuse me. These 12,000 years, which have been just mentioned as the total of four human ages, are called one age of the gods. So it's four of ours, but it's only one of the gods. Right. But know that the sum of 1,000 ages of the gods, you know, means 1,000 Mahayugas, makes one day of Brahman, Lord Brahma, and that is night has the same length. Right? Because it's always, the day is divided equally, right? And then you have you get, you know, you go to bed a little later, you get up a little earlier, like that. Those only who know that the holy day of Brahman indeed ends after the completion of 1,000 ages of the gods, and that his night lasts as long, are really men acquainted with the length of days and nights. Means then you actually know time. So in other words, we've started time from a nimisha up until the day and night of Brahma. Right? So then it has some. So then you have 1,000 times this. So in other words, it's 4,320,000,000 years. Right? So starting off at, you know, one, you know, how you say, at 0.178 of a second up to, you know, 4,320,000,000 years. Then you know what time is. Right? Like that.
When it says age of the gods, does it mean a lifetime?
No, it's just that will be one measurement, because then, as we'll see, it'll get into the next thing of connecting with the gods. So then you have 72 of those ages. Then that's a lifetime of these main demigods, like that. Okay. At the end of that day and night, he who is asleep awakes, and after awakening creates mind, which is both real and unreal. Right? I said that before also, no? Yeah, so therefore this end. Mind, impelled by Brahman's desire to create, performs the work of creation by modifying itself. Thence ether is produced. They declare that sound is the quality of the latter. Right? So this modification, because here it just, what's important is one is coming from the next, the previous one, and that each time it modifies, there's one more quality to it. Right? That's what's important for us. Right? But in the Nrisimha Purana, then it explains that what is the catalyst for that modification is you're adding more false ego. Right? So either, because otherwise you say, well, the lower ones have more qualities. So you'd think that they would be superior. The higher ones have less qualities. But the higher ones have less false ego. So that means Earth has the maximum amount of false ego. Does that make sense? You know. And so then that also becomes, you know, your major element. Like animals, smell is the main thing. You know, so everything's by smell. So it's the grossest.
So that's why we say my homeland, my country, everything connected to Earth has a...
Yeah, like that. So it's all based around that. You know, it's where you're born and everything around it. Yeah. Mind okay. But from ether modifying itself springs the pure, powerful wind, the vehicle of all perfumes that is held to possess the quality of touch. Next, from wind modifying itself, proceeds the brilliant light, which illuminates and dispels darkness that is declared to possess the quality of color. And from light modifying itself is produced water, possessing the quality of taste. From water, earth, which has the quality of smell. Such is the creation in the beginning. The before-mentioned age of the gods, or 12,000 of their years, being multiplied by 71, constitutes what is here named the period of Manu, Manmantara. So 71 of their means that, so that means 1,000 divided by 14 is 71. 71 and a bit, like that. And so then that is a period of Manu. That's a Manmantara. Okay?
Maharaj?
Yes.
In Siddhanta, it describes that the Manvantara 71, at the end of each one, there's a Sandhya, that's the length of Satyuga.
Okay.
So there's 14 of those, plus there's one Sandhya at the very beginning of the same length. So 15 of those added together equals the length of four Mahayugas.
Okay, so then that's divided
six,
up.
Yeah, which six. Then added to the original 71 times 14 equals 1,000.
Equals 1,000, okay.
So there's a Sunday afternoon.
Okay, well, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, there's stuff like that. The Manvantars, the creations and destructions of the world are numbered, sporting as it were. Brahman repeats this again and again. So the Lord creates, he destroys, it's all according to the same pattern, it's always coming and going, and everybody takes it so seriously. But the Lord is having a good time. Qualities of the ages. In the Krita age, Dharma is four-footed and entire. And so is truth. Nor does any gain accrue to men by unrighteousness. Right? Nobody gets any benefits from unrighteous acts. So that means either people who are unrighteous don't do very well in that age, right? Or it means there aren't any unrighteous people in that age, right? But you're always going to have somebody. So generally, it would mean, generally speaking, nobody's developing in that way, right? So no one's following, and it mentions here, no unlawful occupation. Right? Everybody's doing what they should be doing. Mm. In the other three ages, by reason of unjust gains, agama, Dharma is deprived successively of one. So they are getting their livelihood by wrong means, and so that's what drops everything. Right? So we can see why, if you put the emphasis on proper performance of prescribed duties, it brings things back to the natural stage of Satyuga. So Satyuga is one, an age where everybody will be doing things properly. Right? So just that somebody's doing it like that. But it's also the condition of just proper performance of your duties. Right? It's the natural state. In other words, Satyuga is actually the natural state. The other ages are then degradation of that. That makes sense. So that's why Krishna is always putting this emphasis on the proper performance of prescribed duties.
Is that why the material nature has a tendency to disaggregate? Because as it progresses, it loses.
Yeah, I mean, so things always go down, then it goes back up. So it's just the cycle. You go down, then it goes up, and then it goes down, and then it goes up. But you generally see as it goes quickly up, and then then it just goes down, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so that shows us, you know, it's not exactly like that, you know, the, you know, kind of
sawtooth.
Huh? Yeah, sawtooth, yeah, kind of like that, you know. Like that. So that's the okay. On the other three ages, by reason of unjust gains, agama, Dharma is deprived successively of one foot, and through the prevalence of theft, falsehood, and fraud, the merit gained by men is diminished by one fourth in each. So theft, falsehood, and fraud. You know, so in the doing things that one shouldn't be doing, not telling the truth, like this. Men are free from disease, accomplish all their aims, and live 400 years in the Krita age. It means 400 of the 4,000, right?
I'm not sure about this. Why is translated as 400?
Well, if you take the 400 compared to the other and divide it, then you'd see what you get, because it says they live 100,000. Because here he's talking about the years by celestial years. You know, so I think that means 400 celestial years. You know, so 400 times 360. But it can also be that there's two different ways that the main principle is that the life in this age is less than in the others. It successively goes down. But in the Treta and in each of the succeeding ages, their life is lessened by one quarter. The life of mortals mentioned in the Vedas, the desired result of sacrificial rites, and the supernatural power of embodied beings are fruits proportioned among men according to the character of the age, right? So the life, the results that they get, and their natural power, right? So when we hear about in other ages they could do more amazing things, it's because there was that more, and it just gets less and less, you know? Like that. That makes sense? You know, so at the end of Kali Yuga, they'll be talking about, you know, yes, he's such a powerful man, he, you know, how you say, cut down a castor tree in, you know, 20 strokes, you know, stuff like that. You know. So that'll be considered very, very, don't mess with this guy. One set of duties is prescribed for men in the Krita age, different ones in the Treta and in the Dwapara, and again another set in the Kali, in a proportion as those ages decrease in length, so in proportion. So here's also important to note that Manu's talking about this, so it's talking about the natural state, so then everything's just reduced. But it's not that the principles change. Right? In a proportion as the age decrease, right? So that's like that. In the Krita age, the chief virtue is declared to be the performance of austerities. In the Treta, divine knowledge. In the Dwapara, the performance of sacrifices. And in the Kali, liberality alone. Right? No question.
Liberality.
You know, it means you're voting for the Democratic Party, not the more conservative like that. That would be. No, liberality is charity, welfare. You know, that's why I would say the Sankirtan movement is the highest welfare. Because that is the thing in this age, is giving charity. So the highest charity is to give spiritual knowledge. The charity is the thing you can do, because other things you may be able to pull off or not. No one caught anything else in this? Went so smoothly by.
Treta Yuga,
it says, the Treta Yuga, divine knowledge, and the Dwapara, the performance of sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because in this age, the two are reversed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's only when Krishna comes, the two become reversed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I just heard that it was Treta was sacrifices, Dwapara was actually deity worship. And Kali was...
But divine knowledge then means... Pancharatra is because it's Pancharatra.
Mm-hmm.
And so Pancharatra is considered Paravidya.
Yeah.
It's considered transcendental knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ritual. It means for us it may be the ritual side of it, but it's actually philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we have it. Serious. Viti. In the Treta, divine knowledge, in the Dwapara, the performance of sacrifices. Only once in the 1,000 cycles of the Mahayugas in a day of Brahma, when Swayam Krishna appears through the Treta and Dwapara Yugas, changed position and Yuga Dharmas. Liberality, charity. In Kali, liberality alone, the Param Upakar, the supreme liberality, is Harinam Sankirtan. Parasara states, the laws of Mano was the authorized code in the Satya Yuga, the laws of Gotama in Treta, the laws of Shanka and Likita in Dwapara, and the laws of Parasara in Kali Yuga. In Satya Yuga, one should abandon the country in order to avoid the company of a sinner. In Treta, the village he lives in Dwapara, the family he belongs to, and in Kali Yuga, the sinner himself. Like that. Yes?
The reference to Parasara is that's the Dhamma. For this age, the specific...
It means it what gives you the proper understanding or perspective on interpreting Manu. Right? Because Manu is the basic, is the foundational. It means in Satya Yuga you can use it just as it is. You don't need any interpretation because everybody's religious. Everybody does everything according to it. But in the other, you may need some direction to how to interpret it for the application. So therefore, in Kali Yuga, then Parasara is the authorized.
For this Kali Yuga?
Or just Kali Yuga in general.
Even though that the Yuga Dharmas are switched?
No, that was only Treta and Dwapara. Kali Yuga stays as it is.
Kali Yuga as it is.
or as you wish it wasn't.
Satya stays as it should be, Kali stays as it shouldn't be.
As you wish it wouldn't be. Yes. Sinful is the conversation with the sinner in Satyayuga. It's his very sight in Treta-yuga, and eating his rice, boiled rice, in Dvapara-yuga. In Kali-yuga, it is one's act alone that degrades a man. It means it's not, you're degraded by, not specifically by others, but by what you do yourself. Right? The other, you just talk to someone who's sinful, you become sinful. So, therefore, nobody hung out with sinful people, so they all had to sit in the forest. Right? Okay. In Satyayuga, a curse takes effect on the day it is given. In Treta-yuga, within 10 days. In Dvapara-yuga, in the course of a month. And in Kali-yuga, within a year. Okay. In Satyayuga, the maker of gifts seeks out their recipients. In Treta-yuga, the givers invite the receivers of gifts to their houses and send them away with presents. In Dvapara-yuga, gifts are made to those who ask for them. And in Kali-yuga, they are given in lieu of services. So you can see the difference in how. So that means then if you make a gift and go look for the person and give to them, that would be the best. Or if you make something, invite them to your house, that would be next best. Does that make sense? You know, and then, or then you can say, it's more aristocratic, okay, you went to the wedding program, and you gave this, and so they'll keep note of that. So then when it comes up some program in your family, when they're invited to, then they'll see that they reciprocate on an equal level and all that. So then it's in lieu of, you know, gifts asked, you know. So, in other words, if you gave them something very expensive, that's the kind of gift you're expecting. So then they'll give on that level. Does that make sense? So that's right. That social class is kind of in their own order, because they're following more that kind of. The gift which is made to a person by going over to his house is the best. That which is made by calling its receiver to one's house is second. That which is given after being asked is the worst form of gift. A gift made in lieu of service is no gift at all and fails to bear any merit. Right. So in other words, gifts end in Dvapara Yuga. No, it's just business. You understand? So in other words, the point is this. It's not that. That's its natural form. It's not that you can't function above that, like we see in Mahabharata so many times after. Not Parasaram, I got that. Parasaram. After he made his tour, then when he finished his tour, then after that, then there was even though it was Treta Yuga, it became like Satya Yuga. Because everybody just did everything that they should do and all that. So that's the point. If you do what you should do, and you act in a way you should do, you're actually living in a higher age. Right? So in other words, you have the choice to live in any one of these ages.
So we're talking prominence when we're talking...
Yeah, prominence means how many people are doing it. It means, but you can have an individual, he's functioning, he's within this Satyayuga. Now devotees, because of devotion, they're actually beyond that. They're in the transcendental realm.
But nobody lives 400 years.
No, that stays the same. But it just means the effects you're getting. But the negative effects, you only get the ones of your own age. You know, like Prabhupada mentions, just by thinking, you know, an offense in these other ages, you would get the reaction. Here you have to actually say it or do it. Right? The others, you could think it, you know, think this guy. But as long as you don't say it, nothing happens. The vital energy lies inherent in the bones in Satyayuga, in the flesh in Treta-yuga, in the blood in Dvapara-yuga, and in one's food in Kali-yuga. I think it said other places, if you can keep the life air in the marrow of the bones, you can live in Satyayuga. That's why they're doing austerities. You have that picture of Hiranyakashipu, just bones. Because that's, you can do that in the Satyayuga. Like the Treta-yuga, then what do you say? in the flesh. Means you have to keep the flesh in the body. So you can't sit in some place where the white ants will eat you or something. You know, you have to be more careful. In the blood, in the Dwapara Yuga, right? Also, some say is that just by getting breathing air, you know, like that. And in the food in Kali Yuga, so if you can get a handful of rice, you can live. In Kali Yuga, piety is conquered by impiety, truth by falsehood, kings by their servants, and men by women. In Kali Yuga, Agnihotra sacrifices cease to exist. Right. So this is what's bringing out. It means Parasara will bring out these points. You know, it's not that the particular rule is different. It's just how the people's mentality, what will be applied and everything like this. You know, because now it's like, oh, he did something very nice. Let's get him something. Right? So it's a nice thing. It's better than, you know, not. At least you're acknowledging. But it's technically not a gift. The gift is something that is unasked for. Right? In Kali Yuga, Agnihotra sacrifices cease to exist. The worship of ancestors and preceptors is extinguished, and mothers usually give birth to female children. Okay? So Parasara would have been putting this together. He was the Vyas for the previous Kali Yuga, not this one. Like that. Okay, so Agnihotra, they cease to exist. So all these big, big ones. So what we're performing like here, this is part of the deity worship. So that can be, it's called Nitya Homa. So it can go on regularly because it's part of the deity worship, like you see defined in the 11th canto. But doing all these big, big sacrifices and this and that, they just stop existing. Like I think it was, Iban back in the 80s was the last Soma Yajna that according to the rules could be performed. Because someone who performs it, at least the main ones, had to have already been involved in three others. So they've already been in the yajna three times. So they would have been assistants in three other yajnas. Then they can be the lead priests, like this. So though there was no one else, they were the last ones, and anybody else could have assisted them, and that would have been, you know, wouldn't have been enough to be able to lead it again. So that was the last one that could be performed. Right? It was a big thing, I think, down in Kerala or something. There's a whole... whole, you know, rigmarole. Not that. Right? Worship of ancestors and preceptors is extinguished, right? So ancestors, you know, means it's been reduced for the Kali Yuga simplified, but even that people don't do it. And then preceptors, you know, I mean that one, we're still working on that one. Right? Okay. The origin of the sacred law, so this is 1B. Right? So the other was creation. But in order to protect this universe, he, the most resplendent one, assigned separate duties and occupations to those who sprang from his mouth, arms, thighs, and feet. Right? So Lord Vishnu then, according to their nature, gave different duties. So we may say it's all one, but that doesn't matter. God made it like that. You know, so it's like, it's not something to argue, it's just a matter of how to apply it. How should one... according to, you know, what is one's nature and therefore what is one's duties. But no, it's not a matter of, you know, it's open for discussion that, well, I don't like that and I like this part and I like this of that. But no, it's a, you know, it's just the way it is. To Brahmins, he assigned teaching and studying the Veda, sacrificing for their own benefit, and for others, giving and accepting of alms. Oh, sacrifice for their own benefit and for others, giving and accepting alms. So that's what the Brahmins do, patana. So here, vritti, studying the Veda, offering sacrifices and charity are the common ashram duties of the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. All right, so we see here, you have studying, you have sacrificing for one's own benefit, and giving in charity. That's common to Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. But only the Brahmins can teach others, perform sacrifices for others, and accept charity. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm. Brahmins who are intent on the means of gaining union with Brahman and firm in discharging their duties shall live by duly performing the following six acts, which are enumerated in their proper order, means which is better on down. Teaching, studying, sacrificing for himself, sacrificing for others, making gifts and receiving them are the six aspects prescribed for a brahmana. So that's these are from 10th chapter. Then patana, study, patana, teaching, yajana, sacrificing for self, yajana, sacrificing for others, dana, giving charity, and pratigraha, receiving charity. Prabhupada mentions this. But among the six acts ordained for him, three are his means of substance, meaning sacrificing for others, teaching, accepting gifts for pure men. So three does his own benefit, the others are for how he'll maintain himself. Yes.
They're kind of like the six loving exchanges.
Yeah, basically. The brahminical occupation means your occupation is the ashram duties. Mm-hmm. Right? But for the kshatriyas, vaishyas, shudras, then the occupational duties are different from the ashram duties. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm-hmm. Because they're not satisfied with that. Mm-hmm. Right? Just to study and teach. You're not satisfied. Therefore, then you want to have to do it. You want to manage. You want to make money. You want to do all the other things. Yes?
What's interesting is that these three activities correspond to the three prescribed duties for the ages. Yajna, dana, and tapa. That's like satya, purpa, and kali. And the same thing that's given in the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter. Yajna, dana, tapa.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That's a nice connection. Okay. Yes. So then these are all, they're standard things. So everything means what there's always a pattern in things because there's something that's important. So it's always worked into everything. You know, like say somebody likes blue, they'll work blue into everything. You know, so it's that Krishna likes these activities. These are, you know, standard. Yeah. Okay. Vritti. So this is vritis within the vritis. Okay. Of the six activities, the Brahman must perform three. Patana, study, yajana, sacrificing for himself, and dana, giving in charity. Three activities of substance, namely patana, teaching others, yajana, offering sacrifice for others, and pratigraha, accepting charity, may or may not be accepted. Instead, he may accept the means of ritta, collecting unwanted and discarded grains, mritta, begging, or amrita, accepting that which comes with no endeavor. Right. He could do those others, or he could do this. That we'll get into, because this is... it doesn't... it's not quoting a shloka. Okay. Passing from the Brahmin to the Kshatriya, three acts incumbent on the former are forbidden. Teaching, sacrificing for others, and thirdly, the acceptance of gifts. Right. That's why sacrifice is not a temple way of making money. Right? Because generally speaking, I remember is that we would be doing the yajna. It's a deity worship yajna, right? It's 11th canto. So, you know, no one can complain. And so then, but remember in the 80s, practically, you know, Gaur Purnima, you know, every couple of days, someone has to come up to you after the yajna and inform you how this is a Treta Yuga activity. So this is Kali Yuga. Why would you be doing it? You know, they always had to come. You know, of course, that means they must have been, you know, well-wishing or something. But it would be constantly going on until in the 90s, devotees figured out that the Hindus liked yajnas, and they would give money. And then after that, then every couple of days, someone would come up and say, you know, do we have books on this? Can they learn it? This and that. But the problem is if you do it for money, you know, and you're not a Brahmin, then you don't generally last very long. So most of the time, if you think about it, the guy that does it in the temple lasts about 6 months. Yeah.
Why is it forbidden for the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas to teach?
Kshatriya, what is the quality you think of when you think of Kshatriyas?
Protection.
Protection is there, but what's their interaction?
Human. Well, not always spiritual, passionate, etc.
No, those are your finer. But what like when you think of Bhima, what do you think of?
A warrior.
Warrior. Okay. So that means it's a fight. So he's giving you the knowledge, and then you can't take it. I've watched someone who's a Kshatriya teach, and when they don't catch it, it says, "Are you stupid?" Or what's, you know? It's just, you know, it's like, well, you know, what is this? You know, it's like it's a whole thing. So they won't teach very well. Because it's always a fight.
And the
Vaishya, he'll say anything.
And Vaishya, it's just for money. So, you know, he won't teach you. If something won't make you feel good, that you'll continue as, he'll think you may not continue as a student, he won't tell you. You understand? So that's why only Brahmas, because the point is, teaching is not easy. People don't necessarily want to know, or they don't want to know what you know or how you're going to teach it to them. So you have to be very, very tolerant. And that's just the person. Then you have added into that everybody else. Right? And how much are they teaching adults? Not much, right? The kings you hear about, you know, some people here and there. So basically they're teaching children. So Vaishya will do it as a business. I mean, if you run it as a business, education is big, big money. I mean, really big money. I mean, I have a devotee friend. They're, you know, hardcore Indian, you know, Vaishya families. So their line was cloth. But his brother, because somehow or another, I'm not sure why, he moved from their place to Delhi. And then in Delhi, he opened a school. So back in the 80s, to get into the school, you had to pay, I think, 2 lakhs of rupees under the table, unofficial, just to get your kid in the school. Right? Like that. Then you had the tuitions, which were extremely high. Right? So paid for everything, plus you made profit there. So, and I can't remember how many thousand kids were in the school. Right? So, I mean, just the under the table money was, you know, millions and millions of dollars. You know, so it can be run like that, but that's the point. It shouldn't be run like that. It's supposed to be available to whoever is qualified, not who has money. Right? So that's why in good schools, people who have money are there. But for those who are intelligent, then they have scholarships to make sure that those who are qualified do get a chance. Right? But there's only so much, so not as many people who are qualified get in as those who have money. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
What does sacrificing for oneself mean? Does that include
tapa? That would be your sadhana. That means it would be you perform your own yajnas, like your own samskaras or your own whatever it is that you're doing for your own benefit. Like if you're doing a soma yajna, you might do your own soma yajna or something like that. But the Brahma can do it for someone else. You know, because the Kshatriya, he gets insulted easy, all these different things. I mean, there's even amongst those who are the yajnic Brahmins, they quote something. I think, what is this? Yajnante Brahmana Ripahu. Means at the end of the yajna, the Brahman becomes your enemy. You know, or not becomes, yeah, becomes an enemy, because before it you're coming, you're going to do the yajna, so everything's there, they come, they make arrangements for your travel to come, you know, where you're going to stay, feed you nicely, get everything you want, so submissive. But as soon as the yajna is over, they couldn't care less that you're there anymore and kind of really wish you'd go away. Like that. You know? So, I mean, I can say from, you know, 20 years of going out and going to do, you know, all these different things, it's very true. It's very, very true. You know what I'm saying? So it's a Shastra quote, I think, but it's quoted by those who are yajnic Brahmins, like that. We heard it from some group, because some of the times we end up doing these programs with local Brahmins. Like in Delhi, it was Vrindavan Brahmins, and in Bangalore, it was Sri Vaishnava Brahmins. So, you know, they're doing something, we're doing something, and all that. And so they made that point. The same are likewise forbidden to a Vaishya. That is the settled rule. So it's not, I mean, settled rule means it's not open for discussion. For Manu, the lord of creatures, Prajapati, has not prescribed them for men of those two castes. To carry arms for striking and for throwing is prescribed for Kshatriyas as a means of subsistence. Right? He protects, but how he maintains himself is through, you know, his weaponry. Because he fights, therefore then people, means you're protecting, but to protect you have to fight. Right? So therefore then people will pay tax. To trade, to rear cattle and agriculture for Vaishyas, but their duties are liberality, the study of the Veda, and the performance of sacrifice. So their occupation, how they'll maintain themselves, is through those other ones. But their personal life, their duties, is that they must study, they must, you know, perform sacrifice and give a charity. Wow, is this a riti on the riti of the riti? The three brahminical duties of study, sacrifice for oneself, and giving in charity are common duties for all dvijas. Okay. Among the several occupations, the most commendable are teaching the Veda for a brahmana, protecting the people for a kshatriya, and trade for a vaishya.
But vaishyas are also doing cow protection?
Yes, that says to rear cattle and agriculture.
I was just wondering, the most commendable are trade. Yes, just wondering.
Well, it's just a matter of also where you're situated. If you're in the village, then you raise cows. But if you're in the city, then you trade. But in other words, what's left out is banking is not considered a great occupation. You know,
okay.
Like that. You know, they have money, but it's not considered really doing that.
Okay.
You know, like that. You know, I guess it's kind of like a mortician or something. They make good money, but it's not a, nobody really considers it a very great occupation.
It's not glorious.
No. The kshatriya he commanded to protect the people, to bestow gifts, to offer sacrifices, to study the Veda, and to abstain from attaching himself to sensual pleasures. Right? That blows our idea of the kshatriya, right? He's just out there enjoying himself. And
yeah.
No, he's supposed to abstain from attaching himself to sensual pleasure because he has the most facility. So he has to work on not being attached to it. Because at some point he has to leave. Otherwise, why is it always mentioned how the king left everything and went to the forest? You know, we could have just said he retired. Right? No, but because to give up everything and move to the forest, that's difficult. Like these now means in the Vedic time, when did the king go to the forest?
When his son was
of age. Yeah, when his son was of age. Now when does the son become the king?
When the king dies.
Right? And so, you know, in some cultures they're willing to wait, in some they're not. Like the Mughal kings, the great, you know, those big six Mughals, they'd always take their father and put him in house arrest. You know, that way then they became the king early because they just couldn't wait any longer. Right? Okay, then Parasara states, kshatriyas protect their subject people, conquer the armed forces of their adversaries with mighty prowess, and rule the country according to the rules of virtue. Right? So here's that thing. Protection is doing it because he's conquering the armed forces of the adversaries. Right? If everything's peaceful, no problem. But he has to be ready in case there is a problem. Right? And then rule according to the rules of virtue means that's what's given in mind, not just according to what he feels like. The vaishya, to tend cattle, to bestow gifts, to offer sacrifices, to study the Veda, to trade, to lend money, and to cultivate land. Prasar states, dealing in gems and metals, cow protection, trading merchandise, and cultivation are all that is included within the profession of a vaishya. It means all included means they're also included, or this is he's recommending that they stay within.
This is how it was translated.
We'd have to look at the verse.
Look at the
yeah, because it seems that it's not. They didn't catch the gist of it. So dealing in gems and metals would be. Oh no, that's also would be trading, because Manu will mention about gems and all that. He should have a knowledge of them. One occupation only the Lord prescribed to the Shudra, to serve without resentment these other three varnas. Right. So here it mentions, it says serve without resentment. Because if you feel bad, you're not going to serve properly. You know, it's just this is the duties. You do them nicely. Right? Then things will work. It will work smoothly.
So regarding Mataji's question earlier today, if you still do your duty or how was it? When you get fried out, but you keep doing your duty? Yes, one question.
Yeah, yeah. It means that it's just the way it works, right? unless there's some other arrangement can be made.
Okay.
Parasara states, services to Brahmins are the highest virtues in Shudras. and any other virtues prescribed by them are fruitless. Or practiced by them. It means there's a quote later in Manu. Should probably bring that up also. Would be in the, I think in the ninth chapter, where it also mentions that it's later, maybe in the one of when you can't do your duties. So it's either ninth or tenth, where the first choice of a Shudra would be to serve a Brahmin. If you can't do that, then serve a Kshatriya. If you can't do that, then serve a Vaishya. Right? And if you can't serve Dvijas, then you deal in crafts that are useful to them. Right? You make something or do something that's useful. Does that make sense? Like someone's a plumber. He's not anybody's man, but it's useful to everybody else. Right? Does that make sense? So that would, so the first duty is to take Brahmins. If that's not available only, then you get into the others. Just like Brahmin has his study as his first thing. If that can't be done, then he might accept others.
In this sense, like a person like Picasso, he'd be a Shudra, right?
Yeah.
An artist.
At best.
Yeah. But it's, the thing is generally he's painting. How is he painting? Like, how is Michelangelo or
because of
the patronage, right? They always have patrons. If you check, then there's always somebody who's like, I think, that was it Gertrude Stein or something. She, you know, was quite a patron of Picasso. So they always get facility, they get something, because on their own it may not work. Like Mozart, he died poor, you know. He died from something, he probably couldn't take some medicine, he would have lived like that. And I think one of his symphonies or something.
Requiem?
I'm not sure if it was Requiem. Well, I mean, he was working. Someone commissioned him to do it. They were saying it for something else, but they were actually for him. Yeah, so at least there would be one.
According to the film, it was his.
Yeah, but then there was also the thing that somebody went to a butcher shop and the meat that they packed it in was actually sheet music of unproduced music by Mozart. So some music of his was found that way. So they probably went back to the butcher and said, okay, what else you got, you know? We got a sonata here, we got this one here, we got that one here, yeah.
An artisan is a Shudra, yeah.
An artist is a Shudra, yeah. Yes.
And service to the Brahman means what, like direct service?
Means involved in that kind of, means like you have a Brahman, he has a house, you assist him. So that would always be your best. You know, like theirs, what is it? You know, Leonardo is serving the church, so that would be considered topmost. You hear about him. You know, so these ones that are generally like that. So the ones that have this higher, because they have something to do by their association. You'll always hear philosophy. You'll see somebody behave in a way that's unattached. Well, if you serve the others, then it's all these other qualities come up. So it'll develop desire. So the Shudra already has so much desire. So by associating with the Brahmins, then that will be actually very purifying for him. Right? And if he's attached to whoever he's serving, then at the time of death, tendency is then he'll move up into that. Right?
Almost.
Right? So then it's better. I mean, of course, best is that you're a devotee, so then it doesn't matter. But in the Vedics, at least then as a Brahmin, then you study Shastras and this, then you could progress. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, that's if it's available. You know, like he's Ayurvedic doctor, he has so many people that assist, you know, or he's dealing in whatever the Brahmin's doing, there's always people to assist.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like that. That's your first option for a Shudra. If you can't do that, then, you know. It's just so that there's an understood that there's always a hierarchy. Because if there's an understanding that there's right and wrong, and then, you know, and therefore then there's a hierarchy. So then right, what's better and what's not as good. Then there'll always be the element of progression, because there's the point is that, okay, you know, we have the activities we're doing, but then higher than that, you know, then our own general lifestyle is dharma. Higher than that is moksha, but higher than that is bhakti. So there's, you establish this principle, or, you know, I'm there, and then there's a hierarchy, there's authority. So then the parents are there, then you have the, you know, family or community authorities, then you have, you know, government, you have spiritual authorities. So the idea is you're always trying to establish these aspects of elevation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why that's always the...
So which group are considered as Brahmana in modern society?
Which group? So only one can be a group. Only one. Nobody else.
I mean,
means group means intellectual. You know what I'm saying? But as within that of activities that they do, then those who are engaged in your, you know, theology or rituals, those who are engaged in law, those who are engaged in medicine, those are your standard, or in education. These are your standard, like what's left of unscientific, you know, arrangement of Brahmins.
So those people are considered as Brahmins?
No, they're performing, that means Brahmin means you're scientifically following the duties prescribed by scriptures, right, for an intellectual. If you're not scientifically following them, then, according to the Vedas, they wouldn't be classified as a Brahmin. But if they would accept it in a scientific form, they would be. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you're a doctor, okay? So it's medicine, that's based on Shastra, so your livelihood is based on scripture, on what the written word, right? Law is also that way. Education is that way. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. Vaishya, it's off what makes money. Right? But if you're doing that because, you know, you get money, okay, you've done your, you know, MBBA, and so now you're going to go into specialization, and you choose the one that will make you more money. You know, whatever's the one you have the ability for, and you can make more money off of. Right, you know, you would go for neural brain surgery, but your hand isn't that steady, but it's steady enough for cardiology, so you become a heart doctor, right? But brain doctor, you just don't quite have the ability. So, you know, does that make sense? Right, so you know, you'll get, you know, $1.8 million a year instead of $2 million a year. Does that make sense? So that's where it's not scientific. It's money. Or then he'll work in the hospital. Who runs the hospital?
Vaishyas,
right? It means the guy who manages its doctors, but who runs the whole hospital are Vaishyas. That's why to get do this or that, that doesn't cost that much, they charge you an arm and a leg for it. Literally. Does that make sense? That's why it's not scientific. The Ayurvedic doctor, he knows as much as any of those doctors that you walk into their place and charge you so much money. And he may not charge you anything. He can tell you how to adjust your lifestyle. You won't get sick. They'll never do that because it would be bad for business. But he's an educator. He's a Brahmin. So he's not worried that because you'll regularly come to him, he'll make money. Does that make sense? Or you take the Chinese tradition, is that you have the family doctor, you pay him while you're healthy, and as soon as he becomes sick, you stop paying him. Right? So then he'd be inspired to make you healthy really fast. Right? But these other ones, as you come in and they want to do a million tests and put you in, you know, the ICU and for how many days that they can, and you know, they just make tons of money, you know. Does that make sense? So that's not scientific. So, technically speaking, they would be within the Brahminical area, but they're not actually functioning on, because this Brahman is not what's important to them. Right? It's money is important. Right? And then they're also not studying scriptures, they're not necessarily, they may be giving a charity, but not necessarily, and they're not doing sacrifices. So therefore, they're not following the lifestyle of a Brahman. But they could. So easily, you know, the person, the doctor becomes a devotee, then he would be a Brahmin by occupation. Right? But any Vaishnav, as he advances, he becomes a Brahmin by duties. Right? In other words, every devotee is a Brahmin by duties, but not by occupation. That's your conditioning. But by duties, that everybody does. Does that make sense?
All right, yes? That's what you mentioned before, between the ability and the mentality.
The ability and mentality. Yeah. But here you also have the because the mentality is there, so you live the lifestyle of a Brahmin, though you don't have the ability. You know. Yes.
Let's say you have a self-employed shudra who's quite successful.
Self-employed shudra.
Yeah. Like a contractor or a carpenter or a handyman.
Yeah, yeah. Like that.
Then he starts hiring out people and he starts managing that kind of craft. Does he, from shudra, become a Vaishya?
It depends. You have to see. Is it sustainable? You know, or does it go along and then somebody's more clever and then he's sitting there at the pub telling a sad story to everybody. You know? Because the point is, if he actually comes up to running it as a business, means he was a Vaishya, but he started off, you know, at the bottom as a shudra, because that's, because Vaishyas will do that. Mm. Just like, let's say, I knew one Vaishya, he, you know, he is, runs his own business, does everything himself, you know, it's very good. He comes from a family, a very big business. But he wanted to shift to a different city. So he has, you know, a contact there who's doing something, and he can come in, and the guy's offering a spot to work for him, right? So then he went willing to work for him for 1 year. In that year, because he's a Vaishya, he'll figure out the whole business. And then after a year, he'll open his own, right? So it's considered, because a Vaishya can take up shudra duties, if there is not an opportunity for him to do Vaishya duties. So then they'll do that. And then after a year, he'll run his own business. So if it starts off like that, he's a plumber, and he's a Vaishya. It's just that's what's available. Right? But if he's out doing those things himself, and just he has, you know, because he can do more things, then it's just he has more of a managing ability within shudras. He's like a supervisor. You know, the floor supervisor and that. They're all shudras. But they have a little bit of a managing ability, you know, or a guy with an MBA, that's a shudra. His art is business management, because he never runs the business. You know what I'm saying? But if there it's a little bit of something, he's getting money himself and he's secure. But if it works where he sits in the office and he's getting all these guys to do it, and he turns it into a big plumbing thing, that's a Vaishya. Does that make sense? So it's these things, they're fine, but it's the mentality that's the main. You know, so is it the skill that he's making the money, or it's the business understanding that's making the money? Because then from that plumbing, he could go into something else. Because if you understand business, you can do business in anything. But if all you have is the skill of plumbing, you can't do something else. Does that make sense? Okay.
And in terms of time, will the nature reveal itself quicker for the Brahmanas than for the lower?
In time, will it? I generally see it goes from the bottom up. Someone comes in, they generally act as a shudra, and then with time, then they start acting as a Vaishya, then as a Kshatriya, and then they'll come to a Brahmana.
So it's going through the stages.
It'll go through the stage, and it'll go up however high is their nature.
And then stops.
And then stops, yeah. Like that. It can if somebody who's very brahminically, that would be, we'll get into that in the 12th chapter, is that if you've done some, if there's some mental offense like that, then someone who is brahminical by nature can take birth in a low class family. There's something went wrong there. So then they may be born in a local. So there you might see someone go basically from a situation of being a shudra immediately up to a brahma, but then you understand as that's what happened. But otherwise you generally see as they perform service they become purified. you know, they're ignorant, and then as they get active, then they start, you know, how to wheel and deal and all that. Then they want to get into management, then they get into the scriptures like that. So you see it. I've seen so many of it. But so that just means it was there, but there was some other things that covered. So it was a little bit more than just impure thoughts, right? There was some action or something else that added to it. Is that?
Then why are you saying in scripture that in Kali Yuga everybody is Shudra?
You're born a Shudra. And then from there it's either up or down. You're born a Shudra, then you become a, you know, Huna, you know, Kasha, Polinda, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So you start off in the one, then you become that. But you, in other words, your birth was more elevated than, you know, what your parents are. Does that make sense? Because we always take it Shudras are way down there. If you know, if you're following Vedic culture, then it's way down there. But if you're not following Vedic culture, it's actually up there. Shudras are quite good.
Quite good.
Yeah.
Human. Human.
Yeah, the humans. Right? You know, and we tend to be, you know, in the subhuman category. You know, we're being nice here, you know. No? Yeah. Okay. A Shudra commits no sin by selling salt, honey, oil, milk, curd, whey, clarified butter, or milk. Right? Because those things he can collect, right? Salt he can go and collect from the mines or something like that, or deal in it. Honey he goes out into the forest and they collect. Like you have this guy comes around, this beekeeper guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not a businessman. He's a Shudra. But his art, he knows how to get honey from the bees. And then he comes and sells it. But people need it. So milk, curd, whey, clarified butter, milk, he can keep cows and he can sell from there. Or it may even be as it's not his cows, because we'll get later when we get into it. There's the person who owns the cows, and then he has Shudras take care of the cows. And so of the cows that are there, then one out of, let's say, 100 cows, he gets the milk of 10, but the best 10. So now, let's say he's taking care of hundreds of cows, he has a lot of milk. So then he could sell that and stuff as a living. Yes.
What is whey?
Whey. Whey is what happens when you split the milk and you get the cheese.
Oh, like
then
that.
You get
the
whey. Yeah.
Whey.
A Shudra should not eat any prohibited article, nor relate with a prohibited woman. Otherwise he will be punished in hell. You know. So it means just because he's a Shudra doesn't mean it's all right to do whatever you like. It means what's prohibited he should avoid also. If he doesn't, he won't lose his caste. You understand? A Brahmin eats prohibited food, it'll drop him from his caste. A Shudra eats prohibited food, he's still a Shudra. Like that. So that's the difference. But it doesn't mean there won't be a reaction for it. It just means he doesn't lose his caste. Drinking the milk of a pila cow, knowing a Brahmin woman, and reciting the Vedas are the acts by doing which a Shudra is punished in hell. So these are, you know, these are what's considered not good, right? You know, it means the others is, because here it's relate with a prohibited woman. I mean, because it could be any woman, but here it specifically means a Brahmin woman. Like that. The reciting the Vedas, because for the artist, it's a matter of what's nice. Not what's correct. Right? So by being nicer, you would adjust it. You know, just like, you know, the singing the song, right? Bhaja Hare Mana. But it's the artist thought it would be better if we did Bhaja Mana Hure. Like that. You understand? So that's why, because if you do it in the other things, it's okay. It's not bad. It's not offensive. But in the Vedas, you can't do that. You can't change the syllable, the placement, the length, the tone it has. You change that, you change what it's meaning. So therefore, it's an offense, because they're people. So you just don't. Kapila cow, from what I understand, The Kapila cow, if a human drinks the milk of the Kapila cow, they'll live 10,000 years. So you don't want a shooter living 10,000 years. Right? Because then if they live like that, they don't think they're going to die or there's nothing like that, then they're just going to, you know, how you say? Pull out all the stops, you know, go for it. They're going to just party. So it's not good for them. So they shouldn't drink. Right? If a Brahmin drinks, then he'll use it for proper activity. Yes?
What is a Kapila cow?
The one when you drink it, you live 10,000 years.
What is it, a special cow? Like,
it must be special.
Where can find one?
Vishishta Muni has one. They're called Sarabi cows.
Sarabi is the same.
Yeah, same. Okay, so that's ends that one there. Okay, so then tomorrow we'll discuss the glory of the Brahminical order.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai.
Jai Nitai Govardhana Bhakti.